Hey, welcome to another episode of the Lemonade Podcast. And hopefully this is an episode you've been looking forward to. It's an episode I've been looking forward to. Black Panther, it finally came out. We can finally talk about it. Fair warning right now, this is a spoiler heavy episode because I've already tried my best to like not be spoilery on the timeline. I'm not doing it for the podcast. So if you have not seen Black Panther yet, please stop. Yeah, actually don't listen to this. Like if this was Justice League, I would tell you to go ahead and listen, but it's not. So do not listen to this if you have not seen the movie yet. Just come back to it after you've seen it. But if you have, welcome and let's talk about Black Panther. I have a special guest with me because I just figured Shannon would be the best. And I just let it slip. It's Shannon from Nerds of Prey. Because I'm just brimming with excitement. I'm just all jumbled up. But Shannon, how are you doing?
I'm good. And I loved it. I loved that intro, personally. Like, that was wonderful. And thank you. Thank you for thinking of that. For choosing me to talk about this. Because my God, do I want to talk about it.
So, like, where the heck do we even begin? Okay, I guess just overall impressions of the films. So I'll go first, and I loved it. I freaking loved it. I don't know what more to say. Like, I sat there the entire time just feeling a type of joy in my heart the entire time I was watching it. And I just, like, as a comic nerd, and someone who has just like read a lot of the Black Panther comics, unfortunately, because we'll get into that because y'all are tripping. But yeah, who's read a lot of his comics and is familiar with the characters. I was just really interested to see how Ryan Coogler was going to put this together. And me personally, I mean, I just off the strength of what he did with Nakia, and we'll talk about that. I loved it. I just loved everything about it, from the set design, the costumes, especially the involvement of all of the women in this mm-hmm. film. Even, you know, little Eric to an extent. You know, your little cousin who just got done watching all of the what are those? He read 48 Laws of Power.
Oh, geez.
He also watched Hidden Colors. So all of that.
Yeah, so many opinions.
Even so many. So, and I even enjoyed him too. So I just loved it. Okay, I'm done. I'm done standing.
Oh, please don't be. Like, we've got such a long ways to go. And there's so much to stand with this film. A part of me was very worried. Mm-hmm. before the previews had come out, because I was like, oh, there's a little voice in the back of my mind that I had to shut up and go, like, what if we had hyped this too much? What yep. if we had made this just a wee bit bigger than it deserved to be? And because we do that, and we have to do that. We have to do that because no one else is going to support us the way we support ourselves. And sometimes that blows up in our faces. It kind of blew up in my face a little bit recently, but I was really excited and thrilled that that was not the case here. I say this with very little hyperbole. This has to be one of the most beautiful films I have ever seen. And there were a number of moments that I really had to rein in my emotions because I thought I was just going to bawl right there in the middle of the theater with very, very little stuff too, which we can get to, like stuff that I'm not sure if it's meant to necessarily tug at your heart the way it does, but just visually and content wise, this was just a beautifully constructed film. And it just feels like the Black Panther film that we deserved. And mm-hmm. I don't know how Marvel plans to top this. Maybe they should just, from here on out, be like, okay, let's aim for our second best film with each film. Unless it's Black Panther. I welcome the Black Panther franchise to continue to improve upon itself. all the other ones, unless it's Monica Rambeau or anyone else that we've been asking for centuries, can fall back, because
right.
it's just the best MCU film to me.
I mean, it's just like from the opening, like my heart was like racing when, like, you know, they do the little the opening with the, they flip through all of the characters they've done. They switched up their title, whatever mm-hmm. they call it, their little Marvel Studios thing. They switched that up. And I was like, oh my God, this is really happening. Like, for the first time, I'll say that. For the first time, maybe since the first Avengers movie, I'm just like, I'm getting ready to get something that I really, really want once this Marvel Studios thing disappears. Because, mm-hmm. you know, like other Marvel movies, you know, you're seeing them because you want to keep up in continuity, and they're not always all that great. Thinking of Ultron, thinking of Civil War mm-hmm. to an extent. And it's just kind of like, oh, no, it's not. It's not all that I envisioned mm-hmm. it to be. But this was that, because I mean, it was just like the opening was beautiful, like the way that they described the rise of Wakanda and just the history for those who weren't familiar with the comics and didn't know what was going on. I thought that was really executed in a way that was easy.
That was the first part, and like that's within the first minute and a half that I had to wonder, like, am I gonna mm-hmm. make it through this film? Because even just seeing the way that storytelling in that first minute was integrated to kind of bring everyone up to speed and to sort of like welcome everyone to this world, because storytelling is such an integral part of our ancestry, of our heritage. That's all we have to go on when it comes to our history. Mm-hmm. So storytelling plays a major, major part in, you know, our varying cultures within, you know, Blackness. So for it to open that way and for it to be so beautiful was really, really breathtaking. And I think just like that sort of use of animation, that creative use of animation, there are very few films that feature people that know how to like cleverly integrate animation. The last time I was like, pretty enthralled by animation being within like a live action film was in the final Harry Potter film. Because there's that one part where Hermione's telling the story of the Deathly Hallows, and there's that bit of animation like, this is gorgeous. But seeing that open up the film, and I don't know what else they could have done in its place that would have been lesser. Maybe like sort of like a montage of events. I don't think would have had quite the same impact creatively.
Yeah, I can't even. No, because like even no,
it's perfect.
Just the way they did it is great. I guess they could have possibly done it kind of comic book style, where they kind of like flip through pages or something like that. But that now feels less compared to like what they actually did. So,
I'll be real. More than even if they did that, I probably would have stand. I would have probably found a way to stand it. But I'm glad that they went the route that they did, because it was gorgeous.
And it's just a gorgeous film. The cinematography and just the use of colors throughout the film, the colors reminded me of, and maybe Coogler took some inspiration from the current Black Panther mm-hmm. comic that's going on. The colorist, oh my God, what is her name? Hold on, I have to look up her name because is Sarah Martin? No, I'm thinking. It's definitely not that. I'm thinking about matching up Shaniqua Martin Green.
Nope, like, she didn't do it. I wish she had. What a
no!
What a multi-talented lady she'd be if.
She is. Hold on. I'm sorry. I've got
why,
to get this.
When I looked up colorist Black Panther, it said Afua Richardson, but that's not right.
Mm-mm. No, that would probably be for World of Wakanda. Why do you all, you know what? I'm being really dumb right now. I have this comic on my phone, so it'd be wise to just go to Comixology and open it up. By the way, because I'm not editing any of that out, guys, if you are listening right now and you are interested in, you know, just Black Panther and just want to get into it, I believe A Nation Under Our Feet, Volume 1, is actually available on Comixology right now for the free. So, yeah, I believe it is. And then also, if you know, you don't have Comixology and you have Marvel Unlimited, like, you can always go there to find everything, because Marvel Unlimited always has almost everything. And they've definitely got everything up until, I think, issue 18 now for Black Panther, just before they started the switch. Which they just did. They started the numbers over to something weird. It's like 168 or something like that.
It's a choice.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So I had it right. Okay. The colorist is Laura Martin. And if you've seen the, you know, the more recent Black Panther comics, the color, the color is beautiful. It really is. And that's the vibe that I kind of got from the movie. So I don't know if, you know, who, I guess it would be Coogler and then Ruth E. Carter, whoever. It just kind of, it reminded me of that. So either way, I'm happy because it was vibrant. Yeah. The color just really stood out in this film. I just loved it. I mean, even the fact that Killmonger's suit, again, these are spoilers, you know, he had the gold suit instead of, which I thought was interesting. Because they could have went a different color direction, but to go with the gold for a character that is just so deeply troubled and evil and everything, I really love that. So we're getting ahead of ourselves. I'm getting ahead of myself. But I guess, like, what else before we kind of start talking about characters as far as, I guess, the film overall, like, I'm just trying to think. I mean, even like the fight scenes were really, really choreographed wonderfully.
The scene, oh God, where are they going through? Are they going through Korea? I mean, it took everything in me not to stand to my feet, because seeing, oh Lord, let me get her name right. Because I want to call her Denai, but no, what is her character's name? Okoye? I mean, seeing her surf on that car.
Yes.
Was the coolest thing in the world to me, because we don't get to do any cool shit like that. So that was such an awesome, awesome scene. And all of the choreography, the fight choreography was pretty flawless. I mean,
it really was. Like, it didn't, like, it really flowed. Like, at no point it felt like, whoa, what is,
yeah, it was nice
what
to
is going
watch
on here
fight choreography that didn't involve someone. God, you know, okay, this is a pet peeve of mine, and I don't talk about it because I don't want to be the Debbie Downer, but I just feel like this is a safe space. One of my biggest pet peeves in any fight choreography is when, I'm going to explain this to the best of my ability, when, I don't know, if whenever someone gets knocked, or if someone kind of has to flip over a person, that sort of horizontal spinny thing. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, imagine someone knocking T'Challa and then him flying through the air, and instead of just flying back, like, he kind of like spins like a roller. I don't even know.
No, I know exactly. No. I know exactly what you mean.
It never happened.
I kept waiting on that, and it never happened.
I hope they avoid it, because it is so. I understand, you know, with all fantasy, you're supposed to suspend your belief. You know, you're supposed to suspend, you know, any sort of thing that tells you this is not a move that that happens. But that is one move that I'm like, oh, come on.
Like, no, that's not, like, that is not happening.
And if you get knocked that hard,
you're
not getting back up.
Just please don't.
So, You're dead, sir.
Probably dead. Do you know? So that, and also a lot of practical effects, because going back to that, the car chase scene in Korea, like, that was really cool because there wasn't a lot of CGI used for the vehicles, which I was appreciative of, because that means that when I'm watching this movie 10 years from now, that's still going to hold up. Just kind of like how they had a lot of practical effects in Winter Soldier, which is why that movie still, it was just good, period, but it also holds up. Like, you're not looking back like, yikes, what is this? Looks like garbage. And I really, really, really appreciate that, because I'm like, thank you for giving me something that I'm going to go back and be able to watch and not cringe at, because technology wasn't where it needed to be.
Let's do it.
Okay, I'm just ready to talk about the characters. All right, so the first surprise character, well, not a surprise character, just I kind of forgot that he was in the movie, was Sterling K. Brown, who plays Nujobu, who is Eric Killmonger's father, we find out. We get like a flashback of him. And I mean, for the little bit that he was on the screen, like,
he was so what a pivotal role in that little bit of time. And what a way to sell it. As he is always. Like, I don't know. Is Sterling K. Brown human? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you just have that much talent to snap in place at whim? Like, that little bit of time that he was on screen, he really, really sowed the seeds of what is an issue in the Black community, which is sort of the divide between Black Americans and Black Africans. There's sort of, not with everybody, but we see this thing come up so often in Twitter, and I think that his character and just how the story surrounding him and Eric was, you know, so important and very cleverly executed. And Sterling K. Brown just knows how to break your heart, whether he's on the right side of right or the wrong side of right. Like, he just knows how to break your heart. And I don't know if can we mention, like, things going further down in the movie, even if it's not like
cool. Yeah, we sure can. We're just all, we are all over
me
the
too.
Place.
Yeah, no, sure I was like, oh, I can't even think chronologically right now.
This movie's just great. So
the moment that Eric has his own journey into his ancestral plane, and he's back at that Oakland apartment with his father. And his father is like looking upon him like with such sadness. Mm-hmm. And the line that killed me was like, you know, I fear that they still will not welcome you. And just the utter sadness in Sterling K. Brown's eyes just guts me. It guts me. He just does such an excellent job at whatever he's in. And oh my God, I'm trying to think of like, what could he do in like just a straight comedy? Like, he absolutely could.
I think he could pull that off.
He really just can't do anything.
Like,
be bad.
What can
he can't
this
be bad. That's his only inability is mediocrity, and I love it. I love it, and I love him.
And that moment, in that moment, like, it even helped, you know, you feel something for Michael B. Jordan's character, Eric, in that instance, too, because it's just like, wow, you know, he's carrying that hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it lit a lot of things, but he was carrying a lot of, Eric could have used some therapy. But even, I don't even know if that would have been enough.
I mean, if they had caught it early on, sure. By that time, he was just too set. It just wasn't, nothing was penetrating in his way, because he had his one very solid view of what liberation should look like and how we should get there. And he had a mission. So I mean, by that time, a therapist probably couldn't have done much. Maybe one stepping in swiftly after he got left might have helped some things. But yeah, there was really no going back. I kind of wish there had been a little bit, but then again, it's a Marvel film. So you have to have one person. There are no reformed villains. Well, I'm thinking of Loki, but he's not necessarily reformed. He's still a fuckboy. But I'm just trying to think of like what could have really helped him and versus what I would have liked to have seen. And I don't think what I would have liked to have seen would have been realistic within the context of this film.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't have been realistic in the context of this film. And I mean, it just begs the question of, is it even realistic in the context of in the real world as well? Because, you know, the thing about Eric is that he had some valid points. But at the same time, they were also deeply flawed. And it was very reflective of a lot of what we see sometimes with cishet black men who want to lead the revolution.
Yep.
And it is usually a revolution that does not consider the voices of women, queer people, those that are transgender. It just doesn't involve their voices. It doesn't involve us.
Right.
So it's deeply, deeply flawed in that way. But he did still have valid points because as Wakanda isolated itself, you know, the world suffered. And by the world, I mean other black people. Because trying to figure things out. But it's also like, but Wakanda wouldn't be where it is if it had revealed itself to the world. And, you know, they talk about colonizers, or Shuri calls white people colonizers. But we know this history. We know what happens once colonizers find out what you have. You no longer have it. And now... No, you no longer have it. You no longer are where you were before. You're somewhere else with the things that they took from you. So as like there is no, I don't think there's really a right or wrong at this. I think there's just a lot to unpack, which is academic.
It is. I think this film did a really excellent job of not placing Wakanda as a whole on this untouchable pedestal. I mean, in the way that I think us collectively as, you know, fans before, you know, this movie came out, I mean, Wakanda was just like this untouchable kind of utopia. And it still is in many, many aspects. I mean, look at it. It's gorgeous. And we are everywhere. We are royalty. We are STEM. We are affluent. We are rich. We make decisions. I mean, Wakanda is beautiful and something that, you know, I hope we could see as a whole one day, but it's not perfect. And in its way that it treats Eric when he arrives, granted, he's a dick. We understand this. And, you know, he kind of just barged in. But even after he revealed that he was one of them, it still wasn't like a path to understanding him. He was still, you know, pretty villainized. He deserved it. He did some things. So, but there still wasn't that like, okay, let's, you know, talk to him as our brother, as our cousin, as one of us, as he's proven to be. There was still that divide. Even looking at the Jabari tribe and how they were isolated, and the whole thing with with Shuri and Ramonda and, oh my God, what is Lupita's character's name? Why am I blanking on that? Jesus. And I've been like talking about, I've been calling myself Nakia for 24 whole hours. How did I forget that? Nakia and Ross, when they go up to the Jabari tribe and you know, plead for his help, and T'Challa's revived. Jabari's like, this is the first time in centuries y'all have even come to see us. Like, Wakanda is not perfect. There is still work to be done. And Eric had a point. You have all of this wealth. You know, why aren't you extending yourself to help your people that aren't just here, but that are, you know, across, that are abroad? He had very great points. I mean, you have to divorce those points from his actions, because he was ashy as hell.
And, right.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, like, you have to wonder what his version of liberation would look like if he's willing to, you know, strangle an old lady and kill his girlfriend just to, you know, get through. Like, would that involve women? Probably not. Would that involve queer people? Probably not. It's the same questions that we ask of a lot of the men that are trying to emerge as leaders in activism today.
And you know what's crazy? It's not even crazy, but I don't know if this was done on purpose. I'm going to say that I'm going to give Krugler the benefit and say that it was. But Nikki on the other side is on that same coin, in my opinion, as Eric. They were both kind of saying the same thing, but the execution was much different. Mm-hmm. Because when we were first introduced to Nakia, T'Challa is actually going down to disrupt a secret mission that she has going on anyway. So I'm going to let that slide. But
sir.
But like, you know, sis had something. That was very rude, T'Challa. But I get it. We find out that, you know, she is this spy and she's been all over the world doing things to help folks, help people. And her thing is, you know, I can't really come back to Wakanda because I can't be here living in this quote unquote perfect land and know and be aware of all my brothers and sisters suffering mm-hmm. all over the world. Like, I want to do something to help.
Right.
So, and that's what Eric was saying too. Without the violence and his actions and stuff removed, like, just not looking at either one of their actions, they were both saying pretty much the same thing. I just would be more inclined to follow suit behind Nakia than I would Eric, for various reasons.
Right. I mean, and Eric's whole view is tinged with resentment and hurt. Like, yeah. I mean, that's a traumatizing thing to look up and watch your home abandon you. Like, mm-hmm. He's just outside doing his thing, being a kid, and he looks and he sees that his rhyme home has left him, and then he goes and he sees his father dead. Like, so his whole view is, you know, colored by this very traumatizing experience as a young kid, and he had to grow up and prosper beyond that. So, I mean, yeah. It's not like he just came out of nowhere being the way he was. I mean, there's reasons for it. Whereas with Nakia, we can't make too many assumptions about her life in Wakanda, but I mean, she had sort of the privilege of not growing up with any of that, we could say, at least. And we, mm-hmm. you know, she probably had some form of an easier life than Eric. So she has the privilege of sort of making that decision for herself with a much clearer head.
And you know what? You bring that up. I almost wish that they would have maybe just 5 more minutes went and let us know, like, why Nakia left.
Right.
So that we could have that parallel to just kind of compare those. Because I would rather compare, to me, it makes a little bit more sense to compare Nakia and Eric versus Eric and T'Challa. Right. If that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. Because, like you said, they are really saying similar things here. And even after mm-hmm. Even after Eric takes over, she's still on that thing of, like, we have to, you know, we have to save the people. Because Okoye is like, you know, you're in my heart, but, you know, my loyalty is to Wakanda and that throne, regardless of whoever's sitting in it. And that's just not how Nakia operates. So... yeah, they have similar ways of going about, you know, how to, you know, reclaim liberation. It's just, again, two totally different experiences and two totally different paths. And it would have been nice to kind of get a better idea of, yeah, what led to Nakia, you know, being who she is. And me, and we can guess why her and T'Challa broke up. I'm sure it had everything to do with her deciding to be a spy and leave. But it still would have been nice to see, because those two together, I mean, just set my heart aflame. Why don't you?
So let's talk about that, because that was my biggest thing going into this film. If you have read Christopher Priest's Black Panther run, you would be familiar with Nakia and how her storyline and her story arc kind of goes there. So just to be really brief about it, Nakia is one of T'Challa's Dora Milaje. I believe when she's introduced to us, she is still a teenager. There's a point where I guess he's daydreaming or something. I forgot what's going on, but it makes him like, she ends up kissing her. And he was like, oh no, that shouldn't have happened. And she already was carrying a torch for him, because they are wives in waiting. When Dora Milaje are first introduced to us. So this leads to like a spiral of terrible things. She tries to get rid of Monica Lin, who T'Challa is still with. And she ends up, when the plane crashes, ends up somewhere near, I forgot what the name of the tribe is, but Eric ends up brainwashing her, and she comes back and she's Malice now. And she has a little bit of power, and she's just really hell-bent on getting T'Challa to be with her and to love her. And it goes very thin line between love and hate real quick. And yeah, I personally was never really a fan of that story arc.
I'm not, as I'm listening to it, so.
Yeah. And this isn't the first time we've been introduced to Malice. This was just a twist on Malice, because Malice is also, it is not Nakia. We are introduced to her briefly in the Don McGregor Black Panther run, but yeah.
Thank God they didn't go that route.
Anyway, her and T'Challa end up fighting, and T'Challa lets her go, but it was just kind of like, hell no. So I did not want to see that play out on the screen, because I'm just like, this is really tired. Because, you know, it's driven by her obsession with this man. And if she can't have him, nobody else can. Bullshit. Like, and I'm just like,
we don't need
the
bitches be crazy route. Like, we don't need that trope ever.
And that's exactly what it was, too. Because, like I said, very thin line between love and hate. So it was like Lynn Whitfield and Martin.
No.
For real. So, so when... the way that she was introduced, and I was like, oh, so she's his ex. Okay. And from my understanding, she never was a Dora Milaje. Yeah. So I was like, cool, I'm good with that. And the fact that they're ex-lovers and there's love still there, and like the chemistry is definitely there between Lupita and call this man T'Challa, Chadwick. Yeah. And I just... I love this take and direction with her character, because it gives her an agency that, a better agency, a more healthier agency than she had previously in the comic book. So I was just here for that. Kind of all the women, their iterations in this, I was here for more so than I was in the comics. Definitely.
Shuri's too, everybody's little sister. Yeah. Like, I will protect Shuri with my last dying breath. There are very few perfect characters in my life. She was perfect. I mean, you know, young, fairly carefree, you know, a STEM and hilarious and STEM baby. Like, what could I have been? What could so many, you know, women who just like look at science, we're like, I'm not really good at science, so it's not for me. What could we have been if we had had like a Shuri to see, to visibly see? And I know people will say, well, she existed in the comics. It's different.
Okay, so let's dive into that. Let me do another little quick thing. So when Reginald Hudlin introduced Shuri to us, because he is the creator of Shuri, first off, J. Scott Campbell is on the pencils. And if you're familiar with J. Scott Campbell, he is the man who does not know how to draw feet. But he draws his women very voluptuous, very sexualized. So he has Shuri crouched down in front of the panther guy, in front of Bass, with an eagle. I mean, you know, like looking like the front of a King magazine, which, yeah, so it is what it is. But that Shuri is in her mid-20s, and now Shuri in the current Black Panther comic is like, I would say, in her 30s. But the Shuri that Hudlin gave us was a Shuri that was jealous of, yeah, I think jealous is fair to say, jealous of her brother being holding the Black Panther mantle because she wanted that. And she's very arrogant, which to a degree I do like. And she just really wants the Black Panther mantle about. And she's not, you know, we don't know anything about her being STEM related. That's not a thing. That's new to the film.
Oh, wonderful.
And, you know, she's just, I don't know how to way to put this without sounding shitty about saying this, but the way that, I don't know, like the way that a Black man would write a woman, Black woman.
I get it.
So,
I mean, I get it.
That's not she's.
Right. I mean, if it sounds shitty, it's because it is shitty. maybe they should reflect. But yeah, no, I totally get it.
So this Shuri, I love her. She's aged down. She's 16. She is a STEM baby, and she's funny, carefree, like you just said. And the way that Letitia Wright played this character is just perfect because you know how some movies are try to like Black movies for sure, and that. Yeah, because there's a lot of Black people in this movie. So I'm going to say Black movie. But, you know, like Black movies, if you want to dub them Black movies, whatever, where they'll like really like, what is Twitter saying right now? Like, do we say on fleek here? You know what I mean? Like, it's sometimes that force lets be very current with what the kids are saying. So the one time when she's like, what are those such tall sandals? Like, that felt natural. That was funny as hell. And if it
was. It was funny because they were busted looking. Nice. Like. It wasn't like this forced thing. I mean, there are, I mean, if, and we can be very real about it. There are properties that I love that you could tell that, oh, you cruised Twitter before you wrote the script. I'm going to go ahead and put it out there. I mean, look at She's Gotta Have It. There's like one scene where she's talking to the therapist and I'm like, oh, this is cringy because it's very clear you scoped timelines to try to reach out, and it can come across very pandering. But that one moment in an entire 2.5 or however long hour film is not a pandering thing. It's a 16-year-old girl roasting her brother
and their relationship to it. Like, it fits their relationship. They have this very loving and supporting relationship, and like she doesn't she isn't like, I don't want to know the words to describe it, like she is in the comments, but she isn't like, there isn't like a resentment or something towards her brother because he has the Black Panther mantle. Like, they even poke fun at that when he comes back and he's getting ready to fight M'Baku, where she like raises her hand and she's like, no, I just, can this be over already? Like, I appreciate
I was about to ask about that. I'm like, I'm wondering if that was a nod to what you just described, because I thought like, is she really going to challenge her brother? But really, no, she's just uncomfortable. And it's like, this is taking too long. Nobody wants to challenge him. And I just want to go home.
Yes.
Like, it was great.
It was. And I just really appreciated that. Like, even if you weren't familiar with the comics, that was just something I felt like you would just like really appreciate. But being familiar with them is just like, yes, thank you. Thank you so much for doing this with the Shuri character. Even M'Baku, what is a real true thick king, a vegetarian king.
Oh my God.
I mean, I don't even know where to begin, but the way that he just walked into just so ignorantly.
A dramatic king.
A dramatic,
a salty king. A real petty king. Because all of that was dramatics. Because, sir, you could have shown up at the beginning of the ceremony like every other tribe. But you had to walk in, make a scene, and do this whole thing. Come on. I loved it.
I loved it.
I love petty moves. But I was like, who is this dramatic man? And then you get the full, and you're like, oh, okay. Well, you keep doing what you're doing, sir. Because I didn't prepare for him. I wasn't ready for him.
I was so ready for him. And I liked the flip that they did on his character as well. They didn't call him Manape. Thank you so much.
Thank God. I was so... Because I am not well-versed in the comic runs of Black Panther. I mean, I know little bits here and there. Aside from the Ta-Nehisi Coates run, I really am not well-versed. But I do know Manape. And I was like, for the love of God.
Like, why? Even,
don't. Why? Don't. Let's not. Even when they were, like, shopping for directors, I was like, please just... Because I was certain it was going to go to a white director. I was just certain it was going to. And I was like, just leave him out of the film.
If this movie was made 10 years ago, it would have been completely different. Tyrese would have been our T'Challa. John Singleton would have been the director. would have had a thin line between love and hate for Nakia. Eric would have been running around with the perm. It would have just been, it would have been something.
Burn it down. Burn it all down.
So... I am just thankful that this movie happened when it happened. Just wow. But just M'Baku and just the Jabari tribe. I mean, I would climb that mountain. I would make my way there. I'd figure it out. I would become a vegetarian. I very much so love meat. I love me some bacon, but I consider.
No, ma'am. You do what you have to do. Bacon can wait. You just figure it out. You figure out, you claim your king. Because I just was not prepared for Winston Duke. If you look at his filmography, it's very short. It's not...
Surprisingly.
It's not extensive. So he's had things like Law and Order and Person of Interest, and he's done a couple of episodes of Modern Family. But it's not like he has an extensive roster. So for many, this will be their first introduction to him. It was mine because I stopped Modern Family a long time ago. So this is my first time meeting him. And what a treat. Like, what a treat. Both as, you know, an avid thirst demon as myself. And someone who was prepared to receive M'Baku one way and got something totally different. Because I think in lesser hands, M'Baku would have just been a villain. Because anyone that opposes your hero in very... sort of narrow minds. Anyone who opposes your hero is automatically a villain. And that's not the case with him. He just feels like, you know, there were more deserving kings. And he thought he was one of them. And he wanted to, you know, do something for his tribe that had been forgotten, essentially. And, you know, kind of left out. And later, he ends up helping the royal family when they're, you know, ousted from Wakanda and they're in their mind, T'Challa is dead. He ends up helping them. And then later in the big battle, he shows up. He didn't have to. He'd already said he wasn't going to. So it was just a nice turn. He was really nice surprise, I think, because I did not go into the film thinking I was going to have strong feelings for M'Baku Manape. I didn't.
I didn't either. Like, at all. Not at all. Because, again, Manape in the comics, not so much. It's just a flat out hell no. So.
Why?
Even T'Challa in the comics, at no point during this film with this particular T'Challa did I feel as though I wanted to, you know, just give him a little lotion because he was a little ashy. Because T'Challa in the comics, quite ashy,
as you can imagine,
on a lot of occasions. And it's just kind of like, my dude, please. But this T'Challa deferred to women and women that he trusted, and women that had very valid points and better ideas than he had at the time on how to, you know, figure out a situation. So I was very appreciative of that, because how often do we even see that in Marvel films?
Right. And it would have been very easy for him to really exercise some dominion over Okoye. And he didn't. He, like you said, he just kind of defers to her, and she's, you know, a confidant. Obviously, she's, and he's still superior, but he doesn't hold himself that way over her or any of the women in the film, which is really lovely to see.
Yeah, because unlike Reginald Hudlin's T'Challa, whom is speaking to Monica Rambeau when they're in New Orleans in the comics, and tells Monica that she uses her powers terribly. She's a lot stronger than what she is because she has the power of the sun. Sir, that's wrong, first off. But but two, how are you telling someone how to that they, you know, like they're just being inadequate with their own powers that they have? So
like, you're really gonna explain you're gonna mansplain my powers to me, the person that's lived with them? Yes. Okay, sir. Go lick your paw and shut up.
So before, you know, put your tweets away, I know that T'Challa is not all that bad, and that is just the instance. And also Reginald Hudlin's Black Panther run is probably not the one that a lot of people are their go-to. But I mean, I'm just saying, like, there are instances in the comics where you just kind of want to slap T'Challa. Even when Don McGregor wrote him, some of those stories, like between him and Monica Lynn, is just kind of like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you think of all the ways this movie could have gone, I mean, this was rife for respectability politics. And there are a few areas where, it does get a little bit, but I mean, they are royalty and they're secluded. So there's a mindset there that's going to be hard to sort of unlearn unless they do immerse themselves in, you know, other existences of, you know, Black life. So there's little bits of evidence there, but it's not full blown. Like, we were Kangs once. It's very,
it fits the story very well. Like, in a way that
it fits the story
in a way that you notice it, but it doesn't take you out of the story. Because, like Luke Cage, sometimes when the spectability popped up, it took me out of the story. If that makes
that makes perfect sense, because it does in areas for me too. I like, they could have worked to balance it just a little bit more.
Yes, I agree,
but it still was not the full-blown Ankh-Fest that it could have been if it had been. Like, I think one thing that they probably could have done to maybe even the scale a little bit, if you look at all of the men that are and how they treat women, the only one that commits like some pretty egregious acts of violence towards Black women is the Black American man. Maybe Eric either choked out the old lady or killed her girlfriend, but not both.
Right.
Not both. Because
it was very heavy handed in that sense.
It's a bit heavy handed, and it does have you wonder, okay, like, what exactly are they trying to say about Black American men? Now, we could sit here and talk all day about, you know, what they're trying to say versus, you know, how valid it is. Because, I mean, if you talk to a lot of Black women, I mean, you know, some of those experiences, I was like, well, if he's shitty towards Black women, it's because. So, I mean, it's there's a lot to unpack.
I mean, on one hand, you could really like sip the shit out of your teacup, but it also
you really could.
But also, if we want to like kind of be fair, like, it was heavy handed, but also sipping that teacup, because I mean,
I mean, what can you do? I kind of had to throw my hands up,
yeah,
like that emoji, just like I don't,
yeah, you know, just shoulders hunched.
He has a lot of examples to draw from. Right. I mean, but within the purposes of the film, I think in that sense, I would have liked to have seen a little bit, it be a little more even,
yeah,
or just see a little bit more reconciliation between T'Challa's view and Eric's viewpoint. Because like we've been saying, and like we'll continue to say, Eric states some good points. He's just a shit person. So it's kind of, it's hard to really truly like side. And I understand that they make an attempt to bridge it a little bit towards the end of the film, mm-hmm, or at the very end of the film when I keep wanting to call him Chadwick. Stop it. T'Challa opens up those outreach centers, those Wakandan outreach centers.
Yeah.
I mean, so there is obviously something that Eric said resonated, and that's good. I'm glad that there was that moment.
Yeah, but if that was the thing that resonated finally when Eric said it, it's just like, but T'Challa, Nakia said that same thing.
So,
you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, and also sip your teacup. Women say the same thing that this man just said, but you've only listened now because this man has said it. I'm not saying that is why T'Challa opened it, the rec centers, and that's what, you know, made him rethink his ways. I feel like he was kind of doing that just before talking to the, you know, that moment with Eric, but
yeah,
I can see people drawing that, you know, coming to that conclusion.
Yeah. Yeah, it could have very well been a mix of both, because in the after credits scene, Nakia's right by his side,
yeah,
when he's speaking to the delegation. So it could have been him finally seeing the viewpoints of both and saying, you know, I could do more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I sure hope so. But in any case, there is sort of that start, and we'll see how much influence, even though Killmonger is no longer there, we'll see in future films. I am just so excited that I get to say that there are future films like Black Panther 2 and 3. I'm just elated.
You know what? Now after seeing the film, if a storm was introduced, knowing that Nakia is T'Challa's main squeeze, if she is introduced in the film in a way that sets her up for her own solo, I could be fine with that, but it would have to be in a way to set her up for her own solo.
And that's the one point where I'm like, listen, here's where I hope you listen to Twitter, because we've told you time and time again what Storm needs to look like, what her mission needs to be, who, you know, what the best way to bring her about. Like, just that would be the one instance where if Storm was going to be done right, it would, no, there'd be no better place than Black Panther. And I would hope that Coogler is still helming that. Well, I don't know how many decisions he has in casting, but that would be a really great way to fold Storm in so that we can, you know, possibly get the solo movie that we have long deserved instead of what's a face, Natasha.
Exactly. And like, Storm would be an outsider. Storm has always been treated as an outsider, even as someone who is from a country in Africa, still treated that way by Wakandans in the comics. So They could even continue to play with that idea.
Yep.
So, you know, it's there. You know, it's there. But let me preface it by saying that it better be in order to set her up for her own solo, not just to be there for fodder. And I don't think that she would be, because they didn't treat any of the women, in my opinion. And I let this movie marinate some more, but I don't think any of them were really treated in a way where they were just there solely for the men in the film to move them forward.
Oh, no, they really weren't. Like, mm-hmm, all of them were just really well placed, and they had their own agency and their own voice. Even you know, especially Okoye, like, and she could have been very flat and been like, you know, I'm for the throne and that's who I am, but not at all. Like, they all have their own stories and their own motivations, and it comes through really well. Like, and my little complaint was, like, I really wanted more Ayo, only because I love me some Florence Kasumba.
Yeah, no, me too. And I'm just like, I thought we were gonna get some more of her, just because
me too.
She's queer in the comics, so that would make her, I would hope, queer in the film as well. So I was hoping that we would get something there. We unfortunately did not, but if there's a Black Panther 2, like, I hope that they do, like, you know, give us a little bit more of her character, a lot of bit more of her character.
Oh,
but
I know they, yeah,
they can only fit oh so much in it. But I guess just speaking of the Dora Milaje as a whole, just their evolution again from when they were first introduced to us, by Christopher Priest in his Black Panther run as just, you know, wives in waiting for the king, for T'Challa, and they're young women, teenagers. It was kind of creepy as fuck. I was gonna put that out there. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So, what's wrong with these men?
Don't I do that? No. But their evolution has, it didn't just happen at this film. Like, it's been happening over time, and we go over this in Misty Knight's Uninformed Afro, but. Just to put it simply, by the time we get to Ta-Nehisi Coates' run of Black Panther, like, the Dora Milaje are now, you know, actual realized characters, and they're more than just the Royal Guard for T'Challa. Like, these are women who obviously have lives outside of being Dora Milaje, and we get that in the film because Okoye and Wakabi are seemingly lovers.
Yeah. And there's something that Wakabi said in his first, like, major conversation with T'Challa right before T'Challa gets the call from Okoye. I can't even remember because I'm one of the few people who have only seen this film once so far.
Same.
So I can't
bear with this guy.
So I've only seen it the one time. That'll change. But there was something in his dialogue. And I really wish I could remember the specific dialogue, but there was something that he said to T'Challa that I was like, oh, so is he like the Trumpian of Wakanda? Like, there was some real Trump stuff that he was saying, not like ignorant, yeah. But.
No, I gotcha. Because the whole time I was just like, are you still in the second place? Just a little bit.
Because he has his own motivations too. But he was.
Yeah, he does.
Definitely like, you know, Claw killed my father and I never saw justice from that. So I'm hoping it'll change now with a new king. And then when that didn't happen in 3 days, then he's just like, more of the same, more of the last. Hence why he was so ready to turn. But that relationship between Wakabi and Okoye was very interesting. That was actually the other place where I caught myself tearing up very unexpectedly, was in the battle scene.
Oh, yeah.
Just as she gives him that ultimatum, mm-hmm. and he's like, you know, would you kill your lover? I'm like, oh, that emotionally manipulative bullshit. And I was like, oh God, just, I hope he doesn't kill her or that she doesn't like have this conflict. But he does that little that manipulative, like, oh, would you really slay your lover? And she's like, yes, absolutely. For Wakanda, yes. In a minute.
And I clapped.
Immediately.
I definitely clapped because I was like, thank you so much. Because again, if this movie was 10 years from now, we probably wouldn't even have gotten that scene. But if we did, it definitely would have been like she either would have gotten stabbed by him or she would have been compromised and she would have surrendered or something like
that. Yeah. I love that she stood her ground. And the moment that really got me was when he knelt before her.
Oh, I was about to bawl.
Maybe
he might as well have proposed. I was getting ready to lose it.
It was just so, and like seeing all, you know, seeing his tribe follow suit and just seeing these men kneel before these women, like it was maybe because of, you know, personal things that are going on in my life, like it was just a very it was a visual that when are we ever going to get something else like that, where
for real,
just not out of like my life is on the line or you know, anything else. It was just a total recognition of her power that he had to kneel before her and just accept it, and he didn't kill her and he wasn't violent towards her. Like, he doesn't let the warrior rhino, which, by the way, fighting rhinos, that was amazing. He doesn't like have that rhino plow through her. It was just, he just submitted. Like, I was not expecting to be as emotional at that point, but I was. I just was.
I mean, it was just a very strong image in itself. It just really honestly was, for a multitude of reasons, but mainly just to see these powerful Black men kneel before these women and respect their power and likeness. Mm-hmm. So that had me real choked up. I was like, ooh, I wasn't ready for that.
I wasn't either. And I think the way the camera kind of trained on that for a minute, I was like, that was supposed to be a visual that we noticed. Another one that kind of got me, but I would have cried if it hadn't been so engrossed in the battle, which just seeing this troop of Dora Milaje like throw themselves head first into battle and like do that little war cry. I've never heard such a womanly war cry going into battle. Like, it was just the coolest thing in the world to me, just to see these fighting women. And yeah, you can talk about, you know, the other fighting women who are just as cool, I guess, over in...
Who? I don't know about them chicks. They... Unless some Germans murk them, so they good.
I don't want it to be a them versus us thing, but still, it's just...
I know.
I was far more moved by this than I was, like, 8 months ago. I'm just gonna...
For obvious reasons.
And I feel like we have every right to feel that way. I mean, these were just like powerful Black women that were ready to just fight for their shit. And it was like an even fight. It wasn't like, look at these brave three women against this troop of men. No, it was a ton of them. And I didn't know. And I feared for the other side more than anything. So...
Yeah, because I was like, y'all about to
you really are
up.
Like they don't even look like they're giving it 100%. Like,
because again, in the comics, I think it's Doom War. There are 300 Dora Milaje versus 80,000 Wakandan army troops. Oh. They murk every last one of them. So, like, the Dora Milaje are about that bit. They're about that life. So. Just my hats off to Coogler, the writers, all of them who just kind of really, to me, took some of the best parts of the comics and some of the cringy parts of the comics and just flipped them. Like, it's very evident. It just really is. I don't even know if it's fair for me to really recommend the Black Panther comics to anybody after watching this, because, like, yeah, to a degree, you'll get what you got in the movie in the Ta-Nehisi Coates run, but you won't get the Shuri that we see. You won't get that. And you'll kind of get the T'Challa that you see in the movie in his run. But for the older ones, no. Just a flat out fucking no. I mean, it's nice to go back and read them just to, like, if you're just really interested. I'm not saying they're great, they're good comics, like, they're, go read them, but if you're looking to get what you got in a film in them, you're not gonna get that at all, especially for the women. Like, just don't even like hold your breath, because it's not happening. And I guess who else? Ramonda. Everything's oh, better with Bassett. Goodness.
Like every time she was on the screen, it was just such a breath of fresh air. Like
she's so queenly in a way.
So
I just...
wonderful. And thank you for giving us more than like 3 minutes of her, because that's what I was really worried about.
For
I was really
real.
Worried that she was going to show up in like one or two scenes, and then we wouldn't really see her. But they gave us enough of her, given, you know, how stacked this cast was. They gave us a really good amount of her. And I was really, really happy to see her. And when she was like, show him who you are, I was like, oh, that's going to be my war cry forever. Like,
I know, right? But, and you know what? Another part of, I really do like this part of Ramonda that they show. Remember when Eric, 48 Laws of Power, Killmonger had them burn all of the heart, or the heart root, what is it, the heart-shaped root? And, you know, Nakia sneaks one of them, because I was
what
like,
are they gonna
I don't
do?
Know, like, what? What like what are y'all gonna do? Like, is there backup? Man. Like, what is going on here? So she grabs the one, and they're on their way because she like does not want to go up to the mountain to the Jabari tribe. I don't blame her; it's cold. but she's like, Nakia, you should take it. So again, this is like women are like equally held in the same regard as men. Like, this is feminism here. She's
right.
Like, you take it. And Nakia's like, well no, I mean, I don't have anybody behind me, I'm just a spy. And like, her reasoning for not taking it, like, it made sense. Like, that was a logical thing to do. Like, if we can, we should give it to M'Baku, who has a whole tribe right. behind him. He would be able to get more use out of this than I could. So I just, even that little bit, I was just like, wow. Like, it wasn't just, you know what I mean? Like, that just, that, I don't know, like that, those little subtle things like that, I'm just like, wow. So this has been more feminist than...
feminist things don't claim to be feminist. Like, because it wasn't like an imposter syndrome thing of like, no, I could never be in his shoes. It's like, I don't have the manpower. He does. So I will keep doing me, and let's see if we can get him to take the place. But there are just really little moments that resonated as a love of Black women. Like, I just didn't leave this film going, oh my God, Coogler hates Black women. Because there have been other films, not Coogler's, where it, you know, touts that it loves Black women, and you leave and you're like, but do you?
No, there wasn't a doubt in my mind that he did. I would also, his wife is Black, but you know what I mean? Like, you can tell. And that's something that I've been trying to, not even, I guess, pay attention to more, how men write women and how that might speak to their relationship with them, especially in comics. So, yeah. I don't say anymore, but yeah. I'm trying to think. Oh, I guess we could talk about the white people.
Yes.
So I do appreciate Shuri was like, so Ever K. Ross is in this. He is played by, I forget the actor's name, but I know that he's part of the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, something Martin
trilogy.
Which I should
Biblo or Biblo.
Know his name, but I just don't care to. Oh, Martin Freeman. I knew it was going to come up somewhere.
Martin Freeman. Doesn't believe in multiculturalism or something. He said something stupid before. Anyway. Yeah. He's in this as Ever K. Ross, whom I never cared for in the comics. Didn't care for him in this film, because the whole time when he's introduced us in the comics, as many times as I've read Volume 1 of Christopher Priest's Black Panther run, we get introduced to Ever K. Ross. I'm just like, why is this little small... little white man
like,
with
why
his funny
care?
Looking face in this book.
Why are you here?
And he's there to be like your guide into Wakanda or whatever. But I'm just like, could have did without him. Could have did without him in this film as well. But he is there. And but he's there, but he's not there too much. And I had saw, y'all, the Black Panther take, y'all gotta take a nap. But I had seen a take about how the movie still ended up a white man saving the day. And I'm just like, because he ran the little ship into the other ship at the end, that qualifies as saving
one thing. And he was heavily guided by Shuri. And literally by Shuri. 97% of the film's saving was done by Black Bolt. Like, come on. Come on. He didn't save the day. He narrowly avoided a worse situation with one act. And that was,
you know, he threw a this is it. He threw a lob, you know, and barely that. No. You know what? No. Shuri threw him a lob that was like just at the basket. And the lob actually probably would have went into the basket by itself, but he was just tap it, because you know he ain't
just
shit.
He was he just a very fortunate gust of wind to push that ball into the hoop. But it's not like he stole the game, and I need people to just calm down. I mean, in any other case, maybe, but please, we could let two in.
Claw didn't even make it. Spoiler alert again.
Wow, he got murked, which I didn't see coming. I'm thinking of like, okay, so this is, even with Cooler, it's still a helmed in a majorly white studio. So I would have almost expected them to say, you need to keep him alive. So I was very shocked that they let him die. And so swiftly and unceremoniously. It's not like we got like this major death scene. He just really did.
Mm-mm. He just got murked.
It was a bargaining chip.
Eric. And that was another part. Yeah, a bargaining. look at that. Colonizing you as a bargaining chip. Come on now. I mean, it is. It's poetic. So, but Everett is there and he gets a Mubaku Jabari tribe barked at. I want to do that now every time a colonizer opens their mouth to say something that you know what? Next time someone, because white folks love to do this, to tweet you things that you already know, or just to tell you, not even tweet, just tell you things that you are already aware of because you are Black. But they just want to let you know they're aware, but they just feel like you need to check it out. That is a moment to
and everyone at home, because we all need to be in on this.
Yeah.
Because that scene was beautiful because M'Baku had the backup.
It was everything.
Because they all knew. They all fell in line. Like, you shouldn't be talking. Bark, 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 woof, woof, woof. So if you see it in these Twitter streets, you need to hop in and bark at these colonizers together.
Just a bunch. It's like a bunch of dog gifts barking.
I could not have. I mean, that has to be in my top three movie scenes of all time now, because just we deserve scenes that tell, you know, white men to shut up and that their voice is not welcome. We deserve things.
We do.
And totally unneeded.
And unneeded, because nobody asked you. Yes, because nobody asked you and nobody's going to check
just
me,
the look he gave him, like, please. Is he really going to talk right now? It's like M'Baku's look when he just opened his mouth and he wasn't saying anything. He barely got anything out. Just him being able to utter a syllable. M'Baku was like, is he crazy?
Same. And you know, Okoye was on the same thing. She was kind of like, why are you talking? Because and she wasn't here for him at all either. So I just loved it. And I guess to try to wrap things up, the last scene, well, like the last battle between T'Challa and Killmonger, the CGI wasn't that bad. Because in that little commercial, that little trailer, when we got them and they were like, I don't know what they were doing, but I was like, woof. I don't know what's going on here, but I don't like it. But it worked out.
Yeah, I mean, like, there are definitely some parts that look very much like the Busta Rhymes What's It Gonna Be video.
Yes.
I mean, what can you do? It's a non-existent place. Were they supposed to really fall through the air to this technologically advanced fake? Like, no, you have to do the best you can. I mean, I it wasn't anything that really distracted me from the scene.
Yeah, no, same.
It was pretty good. And I still held my breath that when T'Challa and Killmonger are like falling through the air battling and the music cuts out.
Yeah.
I was like, that's just a really cool shot.
Oh, you know what? Speaking of music, I mean, the score is amazing.
It's really great. It's really, great.
It is really great. Just the use of, because I felt like some little trap beats work. I don't even want to like belittle it by saying a trap beat, but you know, like that heavy bass at different times when it was included. I don't know how to explain it. That's not my lane, but I just know I loved it.
I think it was a really good marriage between tradition and modern. It was really, I mean, there are just very beautiful moments when music is implemented, like when they are making their way to the ceremony in the boats and everyone's like dancing and, you know, beating drums. And there's it's very, very beautiful. But then you have those very bass heavy moments, like you said, that are very indicative of, you know, how, you know, what Eric grew up in and, you know, what his life sounded like living in America or being abandoned in America. Like, it was just a really good mix of the two. So yeah, there are definitely I mean, listening to the soundtrack, it's a welcome trap beat.
Yes,
it's what like I lose it every, like, seriously, this soundtrack is so dope. And I know that there are criticisms of that too that are very valid, but I mean, it's just, I haven't been able to listen to anything else for the past 3 days.
And like on the way to the movie theater was like my first time actually listening to it. I was like, I want to save it if I can. And I loved it. Of course, it would have been nice if, you know, more women were on it, but you know,
you look at who's heading it and are you shocked? I'm glad.
No, hell no, I'm not.
I'm glad.
Mighty Mouse does not.
not sure. I mean, I'm glad Georgia Smith snuck her way in. I'm glad
this is snuck on.
I'm glad that within this group of artists, James Blake seems to be the only white boy they see it for.
Oh, right. But overall, like, it's cool. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You know who I'm surprised wasn't on there? Run the Jewels.
And aren't they, don't you hear them in like the previews?
And with the very first trailer, yeah. I don't know if I remember hearing that song during the movie. Maybe we did, but
no.
I also listened to that album on the way home and I was just like, man, this really very well could have been the Black Panther soundtrack as well.
Yeah. I'm still a little upset at myself entirely that I allowed myself to be quasi troll by Beyonce, because I was sure when she brought that little panther purse to the ground, I was like, oh shit, this is it. This is it. And then nothing. In fact, very few women, only one, but it was still really great. And seeing how each song was implemented within the film, especially like Paramedic, I love. And now knowing the scene that accompanies that, it was pretty, it was very smartly done.
It was wisely done. I mean, wow to the film. I mean, for me personally, I don't know how it's possible to walk away and not feel just a joy and just a overall just happiness to just see us on screen in that way.
Right.
In this capacity, just being bad. I mean, just like, I don't know how to put it. Like, it's just, there's turmoil going on in this country. Obviously we can see that there are power struggles. It is not perfect, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's just something about seeing it depicted that way with our voice behind it, was just unique in a way that would have not been possible if anybody but a Black man, or if Ava would have directed a Black woman, could have done it. So I'm just really happy again that this film came out when it did, because it just would have been a very different film 10 years ago, 5 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's, I always laugh when, you know, crusty, dusty white comic, you know, fan bros like to say, oh, you know, they're, comics aren't political. You know, the whole reason I love comics is that, you know, there are no politics involved. You can get away. Look, that's a luxury that you can pretend is, you know, truth, but it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Politics have always swayed comics. Always. Always, always, always. And it doesn't just sway the content. It sways how you absorb and process that content. Because, I mean, looking even at Killmonger, I'm not sure I would have had the same impression of him, you know, 8 years ago, like I did say. I'm not sure I would have come out thinking, you know, he did have some, you know, good points that made sense 8 years ago than I did now when we're in turmoil. I'm like, yeah, I could use a little bit of that power. If Eric Killmonger actually came to me with a vibranium dagger, I'm not 100% sure I wouldn't use it.
No, right.
Like, just given, because you just, we just want a little bit of power for ourselves in these times where we're, you know, feeling powerless. Like, it influences how you read things and how you absorb things, yeah, and how you apply things. And I'm really thankful that we could not only have an example of that, where we kind of can kind of dare to dream to have a little more power than we do, but, you know, to have something so beautiful is, it just really, really pilots my heart in a way that no piece of art, well, not, I don't want to say no, but very few pieces of art have done in recent memory. I mean, we deserve pretty things. We deserve beautiful things. I'm really, really grateful to have this. I don't need everyone to agree.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never say that this is a perfect film, but it was perfect for me and it was perfect for the time that I needed it.
Yeah.
And it's just, I just think that this is a blessing of an opportunity. And yeah, I mean, it's just, there's just not enough great, great things to say about it. And I was going to say that, you know, and it gave me Winston Duke, which I will always
be appreciative of. And I mean, Shanna, I mean, like, I definitely second all of those feelings. And I just also, regardless of how us as adults feel, the babies, the kids,
yeah,
we went to a 7 o'clock show, so there were still some little ones there. By little ones, I mean, like, you know, 8, 9 preteens and some teenagers or whatever. But just to hear them and how excited they were as they were walking out of the movie theater, like, that was just like, okay, regardless of how I feel, like, this is amazing. Because I can only imagine, right, being that young and seeing something like that and feeling some kind of way. Because, like, you could just call it a movie all you want to, but, or just art itself just being art, but it inspires folks. And this is a movie. Right. A movie is art. So to belittle it in a way that just say that it's just a film is just unfortunate.
Yeah. And it's like, you get to, you know, you get to call it just a little film to you because, you know, in your privilege, you may not need this image like so many other Black kids do. Some Black kids needed to see that. They needed to see themselves as heroes and as, you know, brilliant scientists, and, you know, as even on the flip side, you know, just people, you know, free thinking men, like, they needed to see this film. And you can't deny, like, the impact. And I think we're going to really see the impact down the line when these kids grow up and they have something like this that resonates in them and kind of guides them to, like, you know what, I want to get into science, or I want to get into comics and do things like this. Movie has the potential to inspire some real greatness. And that's something that we can, I feel like we should all, regardless of whether you personally liked it or not. I feel like that's something that we can all celebrate. I mean, do we not, don't we still like kids a little bit?
I don't know. No anymore. I'm like, I don't know if we still like anything that doesn't fit our own personal agendas and, you know, whatever, but
T-sip.
Yeah. All right, guys. So we're going to wrap it up because we could clearly be here all night talking about Black Panther. And trust me, we want to, but you know, this is just, I almost feel like the tip of the iceberg. Hopefully this is a movie that is talked about for a long time, and I feel that it will. And there's just a lot of great discussions that can come out of it. A lot of annoying discussions that can come out of it. It's just a lot.
Yeah.
Again, to unpack, which is academics for yikes. So I hope you guys enjoyed the film. Let us know what you thought about it. And just all of that. And Wakanda forever.
Wakanda for freaking ever. Yes, honey.
Now, if I can only find some Southwest tickets to Wakanda. I know Spirit ain't flying there, but we'll see.
They might. Maybe this will change their hearts to be better. Like, oh, wait.
They'll drop you off in the trees. All right, guys.
Take care, Bob.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.